This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Wilmington is the site of the only coup d'etat in U.S. history. In 1898, a mob of armed white supremacists torched the offices of the local black newspaper, killed many African-American residents, and overthrew the elected government. The coup went unpunished by the federal government. The only black daily newspaper in town was at the center of the massacre. The Wilmington Daily Record published an editorial a few months before that overthrow in response to a speech that advocated for the lynching of black men who protect white men to protect white women. The article argued that it is possible to have a consensual relationship between a black man and a white woman. John Jeremiah Sullivan zeroed in on the history of the newspaper as part of a larger research project on the 1898 coup. He's a writer for the New York Times Magazine, based in Wilmington, and joins me now from partner station WHQR. John, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me what drew you to this this history of the Daily Record.
Well, it was part of a larger research project we were working on having to do with 1898 in general and with the coup and the massacre that followed, in which an unknown number of African American people were murdered here in Wilmington.
And so, what was it? Well, tell me about what did the Daily Record project look like once you got it started?
Well, we were fascinated because we kept seeing these mentions of the newspaper in writing about 1898 and in published writing about the massacre and coup, and there would always be a sentence along the lines of "Sadly, no copies survive." In reference to the Daily Record. And the longer we kept at it, the more that just started to seem impossible that there would be no surviving copies. And of course, the newspaper is so important to everything that happened in that year. Not only was it at the center of the coup and the massacre, in fact, the first person killed that day was killed right in front of the newspaper building. It was also central to the way events developed over the course of that year, because Alexander Manley was the editor, his editorial on interracial sexual and romantic relationships had done so much to foment the atmosphere in Wilmington. But there was a third thing that fascinated us, which was more positive in a way, which was just that the Daily Record had been one of the best, really kind of a shining symbol of what the African-American community in Wilmington had become prior to the massacre.
Yeah, maybe I'm going to ask you to stop there and give us the picture of Wilmington, North Carolina in 1898, when this white supremacist mob, led by some of the leading citizens of the state of North Carolina, white citizens, I might add, launched this coup d'etat. Tell me about Wilmington.
Well, you had this thing happening called fusion politics in North Carolina at the time. It's really interesting and still not as widely known as it should be. And Wilmington was the capital, not the true capital of the state at that time, but was the center of fusion politics. And this was an explicitly interracial political movement that was born from a fusion, hence the name, of white populists, many of whom were from the outlying counties, and black Republicans, Republicans in general, many of whom at that time were African American. Of course, we have to keep in mind that the liberal conservative polarity is switched, right? So the Republicans are the progressive party at this time, and the Democrats are the conservative one. So the Fusion Party was an interracial party that was trying to undo the old democratic order, which was the what was left of the slaveocracy. And they were making strides and winning elections, especially in 1896. They had a lot of success, and the Democrats They picked up on the fact that this was the end of the old order, and decided that they had to put an end to it, and if they couldn't stop it, by legal means, they would resort to violence.
That assault on democracy was vital to white supremacy then, and perhaps even today, with voter suppression and some of the other things that we see happening. But we're going to stick with Wilmington, because one of the reasons that this is all happening in Wilmington is because its economy is not based on the old slaveocracy. There is a brand new economy. It is the most prosperous city in North Carolina at the time. It is a majority black. There is a large middle class that thrives not on agriculture, but on trade and business. It's a new North Carolina, and it needed a new politics, and about the only way to stop it was an assault on democracy and a coup d'etat. So it's a fascinating moment in North Carolina history, and of course, fomented by a pillar of democracy, a free press. So you are now looking for some of these papers, the actual Daily Record that printed these columns and, as you say, got people somewhat agitated. You ended up finding 7 copies of the Daily Record. Where'd you find them?
3 of them were on microfilm at the Schomburg Center for the Study of Black Culture in New York City. I think those were the first we found. And there is one copy at the State Archives in Raleigh. And that's the actual issue containing Manley's editorial, the editorial that made so much trouble. It was described as scandalous. Of course, we read it now, and it's almost hard to understand how it could have been. But the white supremacists were able to use it to whip up violence in the months leading up to the election in 1898. They reprinted it over and over in other newspapers. Kept it in front of people's faces. And then a really wonderful thing that happened, we early on in the project, we got a call from the Cape Fear Museum, the local history museum here in town, from the staff historian there, a woman named Jan Davidson, who had heard about the project and said, "We have 3 copies of the Daily Record in our archives." And that was special because, you know, we were working with these groups of 8th graders, middle school students, and
tell me more about that, about bringing the 8th grade students into this project.
It started that way early on. I'm not sure how we settled on that age group. It may have been the coincidence that my older daughter Maria was in middle school herself at the time. But we started meeting with them once a week with groups of students from 3 schools here in town, 2 public and 1 private, and just kind of presented them with this historical problem, in some ways a conveniently tidy historical problem. You have this major event in American history, the coup and massacre of 1898. You have this publication that is at the center of it in every way, and the publication is gone. It's been erased. And in fact, we know that there were deliberate measures taken to erase the Daily Record. So some of the Democratic, which is to say white supremacist newspapers here in Wilmington, published advertisements saying we'll pay 10 cents or 25 cents per copy of the Daily Record. So they're buying them up and presumably destroying them. Mm. Which is one reason why they were so hard to find. But so we were able to say to the students, you know, here's this important piece, and it has been missing, and now we have some copies, so let's read them. Let's find out what they say, what was going on, how much can be reconstructed of that thriving community that had existed before and just up to the massacre.
And of course, all we knew up until then, or most of what we knew, was because of reprints or quotes in other papers, including white supremacist publications that somehow maintained a piece of the record when many of the actual artifacts were gone.
That's right. It's an irony of this research that a lot of times you're reliant on the white supremacist sources because they're attacking the Daily Record and its politics, and quoting long stretches of it in their own articles as a way of saying, "Can you believe what these people are writing?" But unwittingly, they're preserving a lot of copies. So we've actually put together an 8th copy, what we're calling the remnants issue of the Daily Record, and that's made up entirely of material that survived by having been reproduced in other newspapers and magazines at the time.
I want to bring another guest into this conversation who can put this project into the larger context of the black press. Cash Michaels is a journalist who writes for publications around North Carolina. Welcome back, Cash.
Good to be with you.
Tell us about the importance of the Daily Record at the turn of the 20th century.
If I'm not mistaken, the Daily Record was perhaps one of just two, if I have that right. And John, it's good to be on with you. And you correct me where I'm wrong, because you know your project better than I do. But I believe there were just two daily African-American newspapers in the country at the time. So to have a black newspaper, particularly as you correctly indicated, Wilmington was the de facto capital of North Carolina because of it was a port city, and so it was thriving economically. The African-American community there was just not only proficient as far as business is concerned, but government, property owners, the arts, a lot of artisans, the legal profession, etc. So it was a capital, no question, and it was a majority black city, and it was a target. The white supremacist leaders of the state felt that it was a symbol of something they did not want. And I think someone said something about they sought legal means to... Mm-hmm. They wanted to wipe them out, period.
Well, it gives lie to the theory of white supremacy. This was the objection to the supporting Haiti and its independence earlier in the century. Again, Southern Democrats opposed that because if the lie of white supremacy is we're better and all of a sudden we've got the best city in the city showing us up, you need to put a stop to that.
Yeah, exactly. And so Wilmington was a place to be proud of. And there were lawmakers from Wilmington who were very well respected, very well known. And you just had anything good that was happening in the black community in North Carolina most likely had links to Wilmington, if not from Wilmington itself.
You know, John, I want to talk to you about some of the details of what you're finding as well as we kind of put this whole piece, historical piece together. You include, there's a Charles Chestnut story that was included in some of the, Charles Chestnut, of course, a great writer, African-American, who is from North Carolina and who did a lot of his writing here. Talk about that and just that find.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's almost a kind of a Pompeii aspect sometimes to looking at this material from the decade leading up to the coup, because when the African American community here was destabilized as violently as it was in 1898, there was so much cultural memory lost at the same time, and that has been in some ways the most interesting part of the project is resurrecting that earlier world a little bit and realizing just how sophisticated and advanced it had become. I mean, there was really it's not an exaggeration to say that there was an African-American literary scene here in Wilmington with weekly meetings. They would have these Friday night literary gatherings and poems and stories were being produced. And that was one of the interesting things to find out about the Daily Record itself was that Manley was running fiction. He was running short stories and poems, and that was a new fact for us that the Daily Record had possessed this literary dimension. And it just throws into relief how much was destroyed.
Cash Michaels, what does the black press landscape look like today in Wilmington? We'll start there.
Well, let me just interject this before I answer that question, and I think John can pick up on this. Through his research, which is an extraordinary project, they were able to find an editorial. And John, if I'm not mistaken, I believe you're not sure whether Manley wrote this, but it seems likely, where he wrote an editorial, I think, in October of 1898. In effect, saying that even though he had already begun hearing rumors that weapons were being brought into to Wilmington for the express purpose of causing violence and damage and destruction in the black community, that he just could not believe. He just simply could not believe that the white power structure there would stoop to that level. This was in October of 1898. And mind you, he was very explicit in what he was writing, too. We're hearing that guns are coming in, this, so forth, And yet he said, I'm hearing all this, and I just don't believe that the leadership here would do such a thing. I think more of them than that. And John, I think you can pick up from that point, because I think that's something you showed me, I believe in February or January of this year, if I'm not mistaken. And it was something that was extraordinary per your discovery.
It's really a tragic document of American history. And that you're right, it was October of 1898 when that editorial was published. And yes, Manley is talking to his people. He's talking to his community, to the African American community here in Wilmington, and people who are reading it in other parts of the state, and saying, "Listen, they would never be that crazy. Don't let them scare you. They're just talking this way because they want to keep us home on election day. But don't forget that these people are our neighbors, and that we do business with them, and we live next door to one another, and they would never dare to resort to the kind of violence that's being hinted at." And it's hard to read it, almost, knowing how wrong he was on the facts, but how right in spirit. I mean, he was speaking as a truly democratically minded person. Mm-hmm.
Having played by all the rules and done the excess, achieved the American dream. So here we are. So we're all playing by the rules. Now let's play together. And of course, you can never trust anything they say. Let me ask you, Cash Michaels, as somebody who's been involved in the black press for so long, what's your take on a Daily Record project, a project like this, to bring this to our attention?
Well, first of all, I think that any time, and I think this has been proven as recently as the New York Times 1619 project. The Washington Post, I think, has published some interesting articles about slavery. We're at the 400-year anniversary of such. Other publications as well. It reminds you that there is simply so much American history, let alone African-American history, that we know nothing about, that we now have the tools, the talent, and if the resources are available, to be able to dig into and to share. I'm a filmmaker as well as a journalist, so therefore this is something that's my cup of tea. Someone who makes his living per the African American Press Daily, to me, I think it's very key, and I'm not talking about John's project specifically, but overall, we in the black press are able to have access to the resources. Mm-hmm. We're busy trying to keep the doors open and the lights on, just trying to cover history today, and that is a struggle. To be able to have an arm of the black press get the resources and either work independently or work with people like John and others. To further research this area of African American, let alone American history, and put it out there, I think is essential and critical, because after all, there's so much that we're seeing today in our history, particularly with political discontent, that really is not new at all. Mm-hmm. One could argue that we've had crazy leaders before. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. And that the more you know your history, the least likely you are to repeat it. I think maybe if more of us as American citizens knew our history better, and there's one argument that I don't think anyone can ever contradict, even though I've seen them try, and that is that one of the faults of America is that we have never, as a nation, had a sit-down and an honest discussion about race and the role of race in our history in this country. What John and others are doing as it relates to the 1898 Project is so very important to at least give information to that discussion.
Cash Michaels, a journalist who writes for publications around the state of North Carolina. John Jeremiah Sullivan is a writer for the New York Times Magazine based in Wilmington, also co-founder of the Third Person Project, a nonprofit research collective in Wilmington. John, Cash, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find links to their work at our website, stateofthings.org.